Thank you, and hi to everyone, and welcome to the Golden Goose earnings presentation 2022. 2022 was a year that can be defined as one of many successes and continued growth, but above all, distinctive recognition of Golden Goose for its values and vision. Finally, we achieved many milestones this year, from becoming a 500 million company, to growing our Golden family and taking forward on our forward agenda. As always, this is just the beginning. The incredible results we achieved in 2022 just prove the value and strength of our plan for growth. Indeed, we continue to deliver solid results, even in the fourth quarter, consistently with our long-term strategic view. Point number one, on DTC, channel is continuing to be the main driver for our growth. In 2022, we opened 24 new stores, reaching a retail network continuing on 182 stores worldwide, which together with our digital platform, are able to offer a unique and compelling experience to our customers. Point number two, we consolidated our innovative retail concept, the Forward Store, with the opening of New York Soho and Dubai Mall of Emirates. The Forward Store is a new milestone in our global luxury retail. It offers new responsible experiences, the coexistence of an artisanal approach and a range of interactive activities, giving customers the chance to embark on a memorable, sustainable journey with the ambition of extending the product life cycle by giving them a new life. Point number three, as previously announced, we completed the acquisition of our key supplier, taking a strategic step forward on a vertical integration of our supply chain. The integration will give us strategic control of our supply chain, and it will enable the group to scale up production capacity for the next phase of growth, and to oversee a large portion of the supply chain to ensure efficiency, sustainability, responsibility, and above all, transparency. In 2022, the group generated revenues then for 501 million, an increase of 30% over last year. Profitability continues to be excellent. We achieved an adjusted EBITDA of 167 million, with a margin of 33%. All these results have been achieved in our way, as always, the Golden Way. The Golden Goose Way means a wholehearted commitment to customers, to the quality of products, and to sustainable innovation. In this 2023, we are building on our successes to continue to invest, innovate, and expand to achieve sustainable growth that will inspire our community for the years to come. Now, I leave the stage to Paolo, who will walk you through these amazing 2022 results. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the introduction, Silvio. Paolo speaking. On page four, I just quickly read the key figures for 2022, which will be then discussed in detail in the following slide. 30% annual revenue growth with a significant shift in mix toward the DTC channel, which now represents 70%. Let me say, a profitable growth with an EBITDA margin exceeding 33%. A free cash flow of 56 million euros after servicing debt and taxes. Financial leverage reduced by half in two years, and 150 million euro in cash at year-end. We have broken through the 500 million revenue threshold with a growth of 26 million in Q4, mainly thanks to DTC America and EMEA. Q4, which also thanks to the winter holiday season, confirms to be the most important for Golden Goose, accounting for 30% of total annual revenue, without, by the way, any discounts to the final customer. In 2022, we grew by 114 million euro in revenues without diluting the margin, thanks to a comparable DTC growth of more than 25% at constant exchange rates, and to 20 net openings that do not minimally dilute the profitability. As anticipated in the previous call, an EBITDA margin greater than 30% is one of our long-term financial targets. Q4 in America grew by 26%, equal to 15 million, mainly thanks to retail, which contributes 12 million, while the other 3 million comes from wholesale and digital. result is nothing short of extraordinary if we consider the slowdown, if not the decline, that other luxury players have generally experienced in Q4. Year to date, the Americas are growing by 55%, with a comparable DTC slightly below 20%. The EMEA region's performance in Q4 was extraordinary, with a revenue increase of 15 million euros, equivalent to 36%. Once again, this was mainly due to the retail channel, which contributed 10 million euros. We can define this trend as the revenge of brick-and-mortar shopping after 2 years of pandemic. The reopening of borders and consequently the resumption of tourist flow also contributed to this exceptional result, which saw a year-to-date growth of 33% and a DTC like-for-like growth of over 70%. Despite the massive collective closure due to COVID that occurred in China during the second half of the year and reduced mobility throughout the region, APAC confirms the same Q4 revenue as the previous year. Here, the DTC channel records an increase of 2 million, mainly digital, totally offset by the expected reduction in wholesale revenue. Year-to-date performance is negative by 4%, with a comparable DTC close to zero. But the good news is that in Q1 2023, it's growing by more than 20%. We have already mentioned the channels when talking about geographies, but let's take a closer look. Retail is the channel that grows the most in Q4, with an increase of 22 million, equivalent to 38%. 18 million come from monobrand stores, 1 million from duty-free, and 4 million from the concession business. On an annual basis, growth is 54%, with a comparable growth exceeding 20%. Digital grows 16% in Q4, with an increase of 5 million euros. A healthy deceleration in the growth rate of the channel is noted, associated with the definitive reopening of the brick-and-mortar channel in Europe and the Americas, which has encouraged people to once again enjoy the shopping experience in store. However, it still remains the channel with the highest growth rate on a year-to-date basis, at 56%. As you may recall from previous goals, we had forecasted wholesale in line with the previous year. Indeed, thanks to a 10% growth realized in Q4, equivalent to 3 million, the year closes with a turnover of 154 million, up 1% from the previous year. The conversion of major customers to the DTC channel continues, and we do not expect revenue growth in the channel in the near future. Let's now talk about margins, all of which are growing more than proportionally to the revenue growth. The net margin, which is the difference between sales and cost of goods sold, confirms its position above 70% for the third consecutive quarter. Year to date, it stands at 71%, which is 510 basis points above 2021. The shift toward DTC is the main reason, but it should be noted that even with the same mix, the gross margin has held up despite the strong inflationary pressure. The channel shift explains why the 510 basis points of increased net margin becomes 60 basis points of increased EBITDA. The DTC war naturally leads to an increase in selling and distribution costs, which go from 26 to 29% of revenue, and marketing costs, which go from 4.5 to 6.4%. As mentioned earlier, an EBITDA above 30% is our long-term target. EBIT, on the other hand, improves by almost 200 basis points, thanks to a very careful investment policy that we will analyze in the following pages. On page 9, we continue to have a record-level net working capital, even reaching zero at the end of the year. The inventory has gradually increased over the last few quarters, accounting for 20% of the revenue. This is a natural and intentional phenomenon given the business conversion to DTC. The receivables are stable and fluctuate around 7% of total revenue, while the payables are set to account for 26% of revenue at the year end. Our long-term target of a net working capital between 10 and 12% of revenue is confirmed, and we expect a slight increase starting from 2023. The guidance has been fully respected also with regard to CapEx, which amounts to 27.7 million euros, equal to 6% of revenue. 17 million has been invested in retail, with 20 net new openings realized in 2022, in addition to the refurbishment of Milan and New York in the forward store format. Investments in information technology, including digital, amount to 5.6 million, while of the remaining 5 million, 2.4 are related to the new construction of the Venice headquarters, 1 million to the new Shanghai headquarters, and the rest to other minor investments. The guidance for investments equal to 6-7% of revenues is confirmed also for 2023. Even in 2022, for the third year, the performance in terms of cash production was extraordinary. The operating cash flow before payments of financial expenses, taxes and extraordinary M&A operation was 110 million euros, with a cash conversion rate above 80%. Once the debt and taxes were paid, the cash flow amounted to 56 million euros and allowed us to fully self-finance the two M&A operations carried out in 2022. I'm referring to the acquisition of 100% of Italia Fashion Team, our main supplier in Apulia, for an initial payment of 32 million euros and a minority investment in a production site in Campania for 6 million euros. We conclude the presentation with the evolution of Golden Goose net financial position. We began our journey together with a net financial position of 534 million euros and an EBITDA of 87 million as of December 2020, resulting in a financial leverage of 6.1. Now, only 2 years later, the leverage has been halved, dropping to 3.0, thanks to a reduction of the debt to 509 million and an almost double EBITDA. Before starting the Q&A session, let's talk a little bit about the current trading situation. In terms of sales, we expect Q1 2023 growth to be slightly below 20%, with an EBITDA margin in line with the recent quarters, and a solid cash position between 105 and 110 million euros. Now, Silvio and I are very pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you can press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, you may press star two. Please ensure you're unmuted locally when asking your question. Our first question for today comes from Frolk Volkvitz from Oddo. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hello, and thank you for taking my questions, quite a couple. Can you, sorry, it was a bit quick. So the trading update for Q1 is EBITDA margin slightly below what? Current last trend for Q1 22? I didn't get that. Can you repeat that, please?
Yes, Paolo speaking. The current trading in terms of revenues is slightly below 20%, 20% with respect to Q1 2022.
And you said something about the EBITDA margin, no?
In line with the recent quarters.
Okay. So your target of working capital, 10 to 12%, in comparison to slide 9, where it's more or less 0.3%. I'm trying to get why this large increase will be necessary. Can you help me on that, please?
Yeah, this is for sure the guidance that we have, because as you can imagine, to have a net working capital equal to zero is out of the range of any competitor.
Yep.
Is this the result of what we did during COVID, in which we decided to cut inventories in order to preserve the cash? Now we need this inventory because we have also to boost in terms of sales. And then 10-12% is what we consider as the minimum level of fuel that we need to push the engine. Then this is the reason why starting from the day one, we continue to say that this is our long-term target, between 10 and 12%. But of course, quarter by quarter, please.
And in 2023, you will begin to build this working capital up, so this inventory up?
In 2023, the question is if in 2023 we will reach 10-12%.
Yes.
No, for sure it will be a progression that we will, you know, follow quarter by quarter. Then I don't have now the, you know, the clear number of what we will be at the end of the year. For sure, just to be conservative, the trend is to see an increase in terms of net working capital.
Okay, understand. And I think then this will be your primary usage for your cash, no? Or what I'm always asking, any dividends in mind?
No dividend. No. We need the cash to also finance our business like we did in 2022. We use a part of cash to finance the acquisition of two factories. Then all the cash we produce will be reinvested in our core activities. Or no extraordinary payment.
Okay. And when you said earlier strategic control over supply chain, is it done or is it still something to do in 2023?
No, we made the closing of, we acquired the majority stake, 100% of our main supplier in December 22, starting from January 23. Then it's already incorporated in our numbers. Starting from Q1, we will see also the consolidation. While the minority stake is an option that we purchased in order to have a minority stake in this the supplier of our chain, with the possibility to buy in the future if we want, if we need, also the majority of this supplier. In this way, we want to maintain a 50-60% of capacity in-house and the remaining 40% with the external supplier.
Okay. And if you would consider to buy the rest of the capacity, it will be roughly around about the same outlay than you did in 2022?
In terms of money to be paid?
Yeah. Roughly.
No. This year, of course, the second supplier is significantly smaller than the first one. Then the total investment, but from now to 2026, will be around the maximum level, 20 million. But for 2023, we don't see any significant expenses for the second supplier and also the major one. Then at the moment, in terms of, CAPEX for the new factories, in 2023, we don't see any extraordinary expenses out of the normal CAPEX we need to maintain the production capacity, but we are speaking about, a couple of K of euros, not a million euro.
Okay, very well understood. Thank you. Two questions left. What is your store opening program for 2023?
The store opening program is to stay aligned with our normal guidance that we see between 20 and 25 stores. Why this range? Because, it depends on the market condition, on the location that we are able to find. But normally, when we made the budget and the forecast, we stay in a range between 20 and 25.
Okay. And you earlier mentioned the next phase of growth. What is the next phase of growth?
In what sense, sorry?
I think it was on the very first page. Let me have a look. I think it was actually on page 3 where you said strategic control of our supply chain to enter the next phase of growth.
The next for us, we have the aim to grow year by year because this is our mission and this is the way we are here to run this company. Then the phase to grow is to continue in the expansion, becoming more DTC. Now we are already at 70%, but in the future we see a company at 80% in terms of direct to consumer mix to stay global. In this year, what we see and is a sort of revenge of APAC market that was suffering in 2022 due to COVID. Then we are not changing our strategy, we are not making any revolution, but simply to continue to work hard and to stay coherent with our strategy and no discount policy strategy to be in the primary location all over the world. And to create a solid, feeling with our final customer.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you can press star one on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Marco Gironi from T. Rowe Price. Marco, your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a few fairly simple ones. Talking about growth, and maybe just looking over maybe a multi-year, like a two, three-year view rather than a one-year view, what do you see as the potential for Asia? I guess in a depressed year of 2022, it came out at 16% of revenue. You know, where do you see the mix of the business being in a couple of years' time?
Gianmarco, this is Silvio. Very nice to meet you again. So that's a good question. So basically, I think under these days, what is very important is keep on having good visibility, no, on your future. And due to the very uncertain days, you know, in the geopolitical scenarios, I really think that the best way is to stay consistent in where we are. We don't see any significant heavy extraordinary investment in China, just to be frank, okay? Mm-hmm. Why, for example, we are diversifying in the Asia region in order to explore, you know, a much younger and much more longer based customer, which is more into Southeast Asia, for example, countries like Singapore, like Philippines, like China, that are strictly connected, you know, to Europe, Japan, or United States, for example. Then, I, instead of just thinking about Asia, Europe, or America in general, for example, just for you to know, where we are really exploring with a lot of interest is the southern part of the world. That's very interesting, you know. Think about Middle East, think about South America, think about Southeast Asia. What we observe in general is that if you focus too much your business just into the northern part of the world, one of the risks you may occur in the next 10, 15 years is really to have, you know, a very old business, you know, because the average age of these countries and these continents are very old, from 44, 46 years old. So the risk in 10, 15 years is really to have a very old customer base. So we think it's very wise to start investing right now, you know, on the southern part of the world that is actually demonstrating amazing CAGR, even in terms of GDP per capita and sensibility to fashion. So we are having really great results already because we just opened amazing stores in Brazil, in Chile, just recently in Mexico. We just opened one of our largest stores in Dubai, and very other amazing ones are yet to come in Southeast Asia. So we are very positive in regards of that. I hope I answer your question.
Oh, very much. So I was thinking, Southeast Asia would be a big driver, but you're kind of saying I should expand it really to LATAM in particular and a bit of Middle East as well. So
even Southeast. No, I said also Southeast. Yes. I confirm. Okay. I said Philippines, Thailand, you know, Singapore, Manila, Indonesia, absolutely, 100%.
And do you think all of that could be bigger than Europe within a few years?
No. It would take time, huh, guys? But yes, of course. You know, you need always to pursue a strategy of well balance, you know. So what for sure you're going to have is an amazing portion of young generation in the southern part of the world, okay? But in terms of power of spending, of course, you know, we foresee for the next 10 years still a very strong and hard growth, you know, in the western part of the world and the northern part of the world, but this is by mass.
Okay, understood.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
It's investing in the future, Marco. Yeah.
Got it. I noticed in your sort of strategy that, well, slide three at the top, you sort of say investing in lifestyle brand. I'm just wondering if you're hinting at, again, doing investing more, and also the picture you chose for slide three, it hasn't got any shoes on it, and it's got a lovely lady with clothes. So I was wondering, are you trying to message that you're going to do a bit more in the sort of apparel, bags, and accessory side?
Yeah, that's another great question. And of course, you know, the brand born from ready-to-wear, you know, and then, you know, it expanded on shoes and especially sneakers. So, you know, we started already this back on the roots 3 years ago. I want to remind to everyone on the table that this brand was around 3% already to wear less than 3 years ago. Now we are almost at 10% already to wear. We are exactly aligned with the plan. We are not aiming to go that bigger, but we want to consistently stay around the 10% despite the growth, you know, of our revenues. And then for sure on a ready-to-wear level, because, you know, ready-to-wear is good, you know, for maintaining the perception of the brand as a brand and not just as a product. But then on a product level, where definitely you will see great surprises, very soon it will be on our bags. So we are working on accessories. It's a little bit premature to talk, but for sure within the end of the year, you will see great surprises in regards.
Understood. Couple other quick ones. So no plan for a dividend. What about plan for an IPO? What's the timeline for that?
That I am the wrong person to answer this question. So honestly, in this moment, my job, our job, is really simply to create value every day, Marco. And for sure, you know when the situation outside there will be the right one. We will definitely think about. But for the moment, either M&A, either IPO, I think it's a little bit premature, not again for the state of the art inside the company, because as you can imagine, we are always ready for, in terms of vision, in terms of numbers, in terms of profitability, we are always ready. But of course, you know, it's part of the games to try to take the best possible value, you know, from the outside, which is not the case, you know, at this moment. Yeah.
My last couple of quick ones, if I don't mind, actually for Paolo. Just to understand, in the cash flow statement, there is 23 million of repayment of borrowings in the financing side. Is that the capital portion of the leases?
I look in and I'm there.
Okay. Perfect. And the other one, with the acquisition of Italia Fashion Team, do you bring any sort of cost savings on EBITDA for the 38 million you spent?
You know, Italia Fashion Team is a company that closed 2022 with 8 million of EBITDA. Then for sure the integration will be, you know, give us this upside because 80% of the business is done with Golden Goose and the remaining 20% with our luxury brand. And of course, is it something to have 8 million in the first year? Maybe no, just because, you know, we are in integration progress, then we want also to fix some things to integrate the two companies. But for sure, these 8-10 million of additional EBITDA is something that we will have, if not this year, next year for sure.
Understood. Perfect. Thank you. Grazie.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Hans Zhu from UBS. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hello, guys. Thank you so much for taking my questions. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Thank you so much. So actually, I got a couple of just quick clarification, please. The first one is on the working capital build-up. You mentioned kind of gradually kind of evolve into about the 10%. So I'm just wondering, is it kind of you have a better visibility on your order book or something, because it's a little bit counterintuitive to me in the sense, because right now we see the supply chain pressure coming down and the raw material kind of also kind of freight cost also kind of normalizing a little bit. So just wondering, is it what the key driver, please?
Sorry, just to understand if I get the question right, you are asking if pressure in terms of supply chain is something that can, you know, impact on the net working capital dynamic?
Yeah, because kind of during COVID time, you mentioned kind of you keep the inventory level quite tight. And right now, you kind of you are evolving to about 10% of the sales level. So I'm just wondering what the key driver, is it because the input cost or is it because you have better visibility on your order book?
Well, you know, our business is shifting from an on-sale business to a DTC. Then speaking about order book is something you can manage the stock if you think about a sale. Then the visibility that now we have is different if with respect to what we had in the past. A traditional sale business, you collect the order, you make in production, and you sell to the final customer, to the B2B partner. Of course, with the risk that you don't see the final sales, and then you can, have an impact in terms of next sales campaign. While DTC, you have to plan expected sales in terms of final revenues, and then also considering the stock that you have in a warehouse and what are the expected sales, you launch in production in order to fulfill the stores. Of course, we have a network that is global because we have almost 200 stores all over the world. Then to have level of stock that is 20% of total revenues is the amount of stock that we consider a healthy stock, and healthy safety stock in order to drive and to push sales. And this is the reason why we are happy to reach this 20%. During the COVID, of course, we had several stores closed, and we took advantage of the non-seasonality of our product. Then we cut a lot of orders. We also divert orders of wholesale into retail. And in that particular moment was maybe the best, one of the best decisions we took, because the net working capital and then the cash benefited a lot about this strategy. But we need also to consider that you risk to pay, if you stay in this level of stock, at the end, you will slow down the growth. It was a good decision because in 2020, we maintained the same level of revenues of 2019. Then in this case, we didn't increase our stock. But considering that we increased from 265 million of revenues of 2020 to 500 million of 2022, we need this stock.
Yeah, that's very clear. Thank you so much. Another one would be on the slide 10. So I think it's very helpful you break down the CapEx. So I'm just wondering kind of the big chunky part is the retail. Is it related with your rollout of the D2C channel or is kind of different kind of more kind of new opening and the distribution kind of center build up or is there anything else? Is it more maintenance, I assume?
The 70 million in retail are mainly related to the 20 new openings that we did and also to the refurbishment of what you call maintenance, that is correct, of the actual network.
Understood. That's very clear. The next one is, I think in your opening remarks, you also mentioned kind of the selling and distribution cost line within your OPEX can take up a little bit. So I'm just wondering what the main driver behind that. Is it anything related with marketing or is it mainly?
No, selling distribution contain two important things. One are the commission that we pay on digital. And then, of course, they are the more you grow in digital, you have, of course, a benefit in terms of net margin. That grew still 70%, but you have to pay commission to Salesforce, that is the platform that we use for digital dispatching. And also in selling distribution, we have all the costs related to the stores. Then payroll and rent are reclassified into selling distribution cost. Then having a rollout of business towards these two channels, digital and retail, this is the only reason why it's increasing in terms of incidence of revenue.
Okay, understood. Just quickly follow up. You mentioned the rent on your retail kind of network. I was wondering, do you have any visibility for this year in terms of the rent inflation, anything, or you are in the process of talking to landlords, or?
In terms of inflation or in terms of cost impact?
In terms of the rent, I think you mentioned about the rent is also part of the driver of that line.
In terms of rent, increase of rent?
Yes, yes.
No, the inflation is not impacting the rent. You know, of course, we have, you know, the update year by year, but it's not something that will change the shape of our profit and loss. And the worst period in terms of pressure of inflation, inflationary pressure was last year. And we were able to maintain also increase the level of profitability. Then, of course, it's something we monitor because, you know, we cannot avoid to look at this phenomenon, but at the moment we don't see any particular risk related to inflation.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you. I got the final one. Just I don't know whether you have the granularity at the moment in terms of upon the China reopening and the kind of the uptake in the kind of tourist inflow from Asia to Europe or to Americas. So do you foresee any meaningful kind of impact on these two regions, so ex-Asia region, in terms of the tourist inflow of recovery?
You mean the impact, the positive impact of tourism from Asia to Europe and Americas?
Yeah, exactly. Is it meaningful for you guys?
It's not so relevant.
It's too early.
Of course, we can benefit about the tourist flow, but the major benefit we had was in 2022 from the Americas that came in EMEA. While for sure, what I can say to you, because we are, you know, seeing the trend in the first quarter, is that the reopening of China, internal and external, you know, and also the border, is positively impacted the trend, because as I was saying during the call, we are more than 20% in terms of growth in the first 3 months in the APAC region. Then is a mix between you know, freedom to also move internally into the China, and also the tourism flow between APAC. But in terms of impact in Europe and in America, let me say, it's not something that will impact a lot.
Understood. That's very clear. Thank you so much for your time. Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.